This is Infants on Thrones.
Throwback Friday.
Throwback Friday.
Star Wars.
Recording the listener essay with Jamie a week or so ago that Tom led, and he mentioned the movie Kumare, and he asked us if we had seen it. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, and man. I listened back to my response, like, we did an episode on it. Like, what are you even, why are you, you don't know that? How dare you?
Well, I think he actually said, well, I know you guys hated it.
Like, we didn't.
We loved it. I thought.
Oh yeah,
I love the movie.
Fail, Jamie. But it's because only like 2,800 people listened to it, and he probably wasn't one of them. So yeah. And this was another one of those like me being cute with the name, like Beliefumentary, where we.
Yeah, good thing you grew out of that.
Yeah, right. it was when I used to be a dick, and. But we reviewed Religulous and Kumare.
Compared and contrasted the two.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked it.
That's a good episode. That's a really good episode.
I really liked that one, too.
It was a good episode.
And not just because I was on it, but I really liked it. Yeah.
And I did a Brother Jake intro to it. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Oh, yeah.
What was the Brother Jake intro?
That was actually pretty... I just recorded like an intro about Religulous and Kumare. It was like back to back, just like boom, boom, about those the two things. And I thought that I did a pretty good job. It was like it was a little bit of Brother Jack in there, where he was making fun of Bill Maher, who many ex-Mormons look to as a person to look to.
As a person to look to.
I don't remember that intro. But let's
have to go back and listen to it.
Let's cue it up and
awesome.
Now.
The comedian of crunch, the perennial punchliner, the real-time deal, Bill Maher.
I certainly, honestly believe religion is detrimental to the progress of humanity.
And in our left corner, the Swami of Slaughter, the guru.
Who you think that I am?
Let's get ready to...
Reach out, touch faith.
All right. That was a little stupid. I don't know what made me get all Michael Buffer on you. I promise. I'll never do anything that stupid again. Tonight, we're simply going to compare Kumare and Religulous. Two documentaries on belief. So you might call them beliefumentaries. Oh, I did it again. Okay, I'm just going to shut up now.
This is Infants on Thrones. Philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core of the core.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and once again, I'm joined by our full quorum. Jesse Smith.
We wanted to start with Religulous.
Bob Caswell.
It's just your pronunciation didn't improve, that's all.
Tom Perry.
Now I've got to take this severe left turn.
Matt Long.
When you think about it for a little longer, it's still bullshit, but I got to tell you.
And Randy Snyder.
He went out and picked all the low-hanging fruit.
Just one piece of news for you all. We have a new survey. It's short and informative and delicious to the taste. We desire all to receive it. Seriously, the last time we had 61 responses, which is pretty good, but we think we have around 3,000 regular listeners. So head over to www.infantsonthrones.com and look for the survey link on the top right of the page. We'd love to get your feedback. We think it'll help our podcast get better. And as soon as we have some significant findings, we'll definitely return and report. All right, now that we've got that out of the way, we have a special treat here from one of my favorite people in the whole world, Brother Jake. Now, you may remember Brother Jake from such YouTube videos as, you know, all the YouTube videos that Brother Jake does. So Brother Jake took a few moments to sit down and do a quick synopsis of the documentaries Religulous and Kumare. And here it is right now.
Hi, I'm Brother Jake. So Religulous is this really neat documentary about this super smart dude named Bill Maher who goes around and talks to people about religion. And the best part about it is that he starts off the movie by saying that he just wants to find out why people have religious beliefs. And sure, it might seem a little strange that he went about this project to connect with and understand people by getting them on camera, asking them questions specifically tailored to embarrass them, and then laughing in their face when they try to answer, but I think he proved a point. Religion is terrible, because all religions have terrible things about them. And granted, he didn't do like a great job from like an academic or scientific perspective of showing why religion specifically is so awful, since all the bad things he pointed out about religions, like the oppression, manipulation, and exploitation of believers, could and do exist in pretty much any large organization based around an ideology like, say, a political party. And yeah, there may be some irony in the fact that somebody who so often used science and academia as a counterpoint to religious doctrine used such a non-scientific, non-academic approach to prove those very counterpoints, but here's what Bill Maher is trying to say. Religions are bad because they're using an enticing premise to draw people in and then manipulate or exploit those people for personal gain. And we all know that that's something that Bill Maher would never do. Now, Kumare is this other documentary about this Indian guy named Vikram who grew up in New Jersey, and he was so fed up with people acting like gurus and exploiting people that he decided to act like a guru and exploit people himself to see if they would follow him. Because we all know the best way to fight the rampant exploitation of people's gullibility is to tap into that gullibility under a false identity and then film their acceptance of your facade so that you can make a documentary about how gullible they are. Anyway, so these people totally buy it. All he had to do was completely change his appearance, voice, mentality, and lifestyle for like a year, which proves his point that gurus are totally not legit. Anyone can be a guru as long as you say and do exactly what a guru would say and do all the time. Kind of like how by learning all about statistics and doing everything a statistician would do until I get a job as a statistician, I can prove that statistics is all made up.
Isn't Brother Jake just awesome? All right, now that we've got that out of the way, let's get on to our panel discussion on that first movie. What's it called?
Well, first of all, I don't know how to pronounce it. Everybody says it a different way, and it's just an annoying word. Religulous, right? It's supposed to be like ridiculous.
It's pronounced religulous because it's a conflation of religion and ridiculous, so religulous.
We get that, but like it's just an annoying word.
Well, then why are you saying I don't know how to pronounce it?
Because when you do a conflated thing that combines two words, you don't know which part of the conflation stops on one word and starts on the other. And there's two ways to say it.
But not with beliefumentary.
Hmm? Well, there's no G in ridiculous, so pronounce it the way it is in religion.
Wow, this is really fascinating. Well, let's
move on to the
title.
Let's okay, restart.
So we wanted to start with religulous.
No, it's fine. It's just your pronunciation didn't improve. That's all.
Oh, sorry.
The religious was clearly an indictment on religion, and it was just took a nice sweep at all of them, from Islam to Judaism to Mormons to Scientology to Catholics and general Christianity, with Bill Maher splicing in kind of funny clips to highlight certain points, and it was a pretty good narrative. I thought it was edited pretty well. Bill was as likable as he can possibly be in this film, much more than he is on his TV show or anything, even a stand-up. I mean, I thought it was a lot better than I expected to be, given my disdain for Bill Maher and his arrogance and just kind of heavy-handed approach.
Really? Because I had an opposite reaction. I watch his TV show, which I agree his methodology and the way he approaches things sometimes is over the top and it, not that effective. But I felt the TV show was too much. It was like too ambitious because it was all about me. Let me show you pictures from my childhood. Let me interview my mom and my sister.
You're saying the movie was too ambitious.
Yeah, the movie was too ambitious. Like, if you're going to tackle religion, then don't do the like narrative about yourself and then film yourself talking to a dude while you're driving in the passenger seat of a car. Because it's very very limited perspective. When religions of the entire world is the scope of your movie, then there should be a lot less of you. And I think Bill Maher just couldn't separate himself from the subject matter, which made it worse for me. Like, the more he wanted to tell his narrative, and leading up to the very end where he has this super long soapbox speech.
Plain fact is, religion must die for mankind to live. The hour is getting very late to be able to indulge in having key decisions made by religious people, by irrationalists, by those who would steer the ship of state not by a compass, but by the equivalent of reading the entrails of a chicken. That's it. Grow up or die.
And that's what really rubbed me the wrong way, is it was all about Bill Maher when it should have been more about religions.
I mean, you realize he's a stand-up comedian by trait. You know, stand-ups, comedians are always starting from themselves and seeing and going out from the world from themselves. He's not a documentary maker, so were you really expecting, like, a hardcore journalistic documentary from this?
No, but I'm judging it as a documentary. I mean,
is it a documentary? I mean, it's more...
No, I don't think it's a documentary. I think it's it was meant to be a comedy.
Yeah, oh, come on.
It was.
Propaganda. It's just as much a documentary as anything that Michael Moore puts out.
Right.
Well, that's true. And, I agree. And that was my one criticism of it, or the thing that I am frustrated with, is I didn't know what stuff was taken out of context and what wasn't. I mean, I think...
Because... All of Mormonism was.
That's the Mormon temple behind me. To be a Mormon is to believe some really crazy stuff. Crazy even by the standards of the big religions.
Even when I saw this the first time in theaters in 2008, I didn't like that at all.
I'm glad you said that, because I read some of the tenets of Mormonism, like God lives on a planet near the star
Kolob.
Jesus Christ was conceived by God the Father having actual sex with Mary. Dark skin is a curse from God, but if you're sufficiently righteous, a dark-skinned person can become light-skinned. Caffeine is evil, but magic underwear can protect you. And you need a secret password to get into heaven.
What did you think specifically was taken out of context?
You're showing a dude suck a woman's breast as the representation of the 30 seconds of narrative on what defines Mormonism? That's totally out of context. You guys thought Mormonism was well represented? I mean, even if, like...
Well, I thought the part where they had, like, Tal Bachman on, you know, I thought he gave... I thought what he had to say was pretty, at least, representative of a lot of people's experience.
Why do you think it is that so few people do what you have done and leave the church?
The moment you acknowledge to yourself that Joseph Smith did not tell the truth about his experiences and his achievements, he just committed social suicide.
Well, the whole movie, I mean, it's called Religulous, which is a play on ridiculous, and it was all about ridicule. I mean, that's the methodology for the movie. And it, you know, Bill Maher goes from group to group to group to group to group, and all he's doing is making fun of them. He's pointing out how stupid religion is. I like the movie, and I like Bill Maher. You know, I watch his show too. But the thing that I found the most disingenuous about the movie, and he said this in a couple of different parts, that he preaches the gospel of I don't know.
Yeah, you could be right. I don't think it's very likely, but yes, you could be right, because my big thing is I don't know. That's what I preach. I preach the gospel of I don't know.
I didn't mean that's what I'm here promoting, doubt. Right. That's my product.
Right.
The other guys are selling certainty, not me. I'm on the corner with doubt.
But that's so bullshit, because then he's so certain about everything else that he says, you know, and you mentioned that soapbox ending is so over the top. You know, he makes this statement like, religion must die in order for humanity to live. Yeah, that sounds like something somebody that doesn't know. You know, in the same breath he's talking, I found this so ironic at the end that he's talking about, you know, religious people with their arrogance of certainty.
The only appropriate attitude for man to have about the big questions is not the arrogant certitude that is the hallmark of religion, but doubt. Doubt is humble.
There's nothing humble about Bill Maher, you know, to say that. And I don't think that he's promoting doubt.
I think he is promoting doubt, but I think he's being disingenuous to say that he just claims to, you know, his certainty of any kind of belief is just I don't know. I think he has a very high level of certainty in terms of what he thinks he knows. And that's that he doesn't think there's a God, or he doesn't believe in any kind of religion. But
I think also when he's in like a situation with the fundamentalist Christian truck drivers right at the beginning, you know, when you're face to face with real humans that really believe, Mm-hmm. You're not going to sit there and pound the pulpit and say, there is no God. He's going to say, I preach doubt. So he's taking a softer angle. I agree. He's disingenuous and he's inconsistent with what his message is. And one of the biggest criticisms of this movie is that he went out and picked all the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and so he finds all the fundamentalists, Christians, Muslims, Jews, Mormons. Well, he actually didn't talk to any fundamentalist Mormons. They kicked him off the premises before he could do anything. You know, so my answer to the criticism to that is that what has a larger number of the population of believers, the people that are more fundamentalists in their beliefs, or these kind of hipster, more sophisticated, nuanced believers? What, you know, is he going after the population that is greater, or is he just going after is a low hanging fruit the majority of the fruit, or is most of the fruit at the top of the tree? And I think I empathize with the people who are more towards the top of the tree, saying, "Hey, you're just making fun of all those people at the bottom. That doesn't represent me, and that's not how I approach faith." But at the same time, I think he's approaching what is the big problem in the world, and that's fundamentalist dogmatic religion.
I certainly, honestly believe religion is detrimental to the progress of humanity.
I think you got a really good point there, you know, with the analogy of the fruit up at the top of the tree. And he makes this claim at the beginning that there are really smart, rational people who believe this stuff, and he just has to find out why.
People who are otherwise so rational about everything else, and then they believe that on Sunday they're drinking the blood of a 2,000-year-old God. I can't. That's a dissonance in my head. I can't. I have to find out. I just have to find out. I have to try.
And this is at the beginning of the movie, so he's kind of framing his approach as an investigation. But again, I'm going to call bullshit on this, because he's not trying to learn anything from anybody.
And one of the big moments that I thought he was the biggest disappointment for me was he had an actual psychologist in religion.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, he spent so much time with that idiot Hasidic Jew who has a whole business on how to get around the Hasidic laws.
Right. The Shabbat Evader was my favorite.
Yeah, he spent so much time with that guy. I'm just like almost fast forwarded through it because it's like, this is stupid. And he spends so little time digging deeper into the psychology of religion.
Right.
And to me, you know, this, you know, I'm just reinforcing your point, Glenn, that it was disingenuous and he wasn't really, he didn't attempt to dig deep, but he then comes with a big coup de grace monologue at the end. Like he's, you know, got all the answers.
He solved it. Yeah.
See, but I think to some extent that was that technique that he used in the film was effective, because in doing that and in taking those easy swipes at so many different religions, it kind of, you know, if you believed in any degree in any of those religions, I think it's much easier to look at every other religion and say, oh, look how silly they are. Look how silly they are. Look how silly they are. And then when it's your turn to be made fun of, you have to go, no, wait. Like the things, like kind of probably what you were feeling, Bob, in 2008, maybe that's part of what he was trying to do in the movie, is to give you that cognitive distance. Like, okay, well, he represented these other religions, and I thought it was funny, but when he represented my religion or a religion that I'm more familiar with, you know, then he got it wrong.
Right, but even as somebody exiting religion, it made me question the approach and the accuracy of every other religion represented, because I thought I could take him at face value, but then I see how he represented Mormonism, and it was like, you know, Tal Bachman said some good things, but Tal Bachman had as much screen time as Bill Maher monologuing what he learned about Mormonism. Like every single scene was like, let me interview someone, but then let me talk slightly more than them and give you a bunch of information, you know, from my looking it up on Wikipedia or something. And that sort of bugged me, because it made me then wonder if he had anything about Judaism, Catholicism, Islam, you know, where the line was of all those. Was it 50-50 or was it more accurate? It's hard to say, because I'm not an expert in all those religions.
So what about the good things that this movie does? Because I do think, and I think this is where you were going, Jesse, as well. He calls out a lot of hypocrisies, which, you know, it's part of this low-hanging fruit that Randy was talking about. Yeah, the hypocrisy around, money-making, taking advantage of believers and taking their money. That was a big theme.
Well, my favorite part is when he's in Rome, when he's in the Vatican, rather, and he's talking to that.
I love that priest.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah, he's talking to the priest, and, well, do you think that the Pope should live there? He's like, well, of course not. I mean, right. I would do things differently if I was in charge. I thought that's my favorite scene, actually.
Yeah, no Mormon would ever do that. So that was awesome. I also thought that when he interviewed the senator, I thought that was important.
Do you believe in evolution?
You know, I don't know. Clearly, the scientific community is a little divided on some of the specifics of that, and I understand that.
I don't think they are.
No,
I think they pretty much agree.
I don't know how it all happened. I mean, I'm certainly willing to
accept it couldn't possibly have been Adam and Eve 5,000 years ago with a talking snake in a garden, could it?
Well, it could have possibly been that.
Come on. This is my problem. Yeah. You're a senator. You are one of the very few people who are really running this country. It worries me that people are running my country who believe in a talking snake.
You don't have to pass an IQ test to be in the Senate, though.
That was great.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to Randy's point about numbers. You know, if we're saying in terms of the numbers of people who are out there, are there more fundamentalists or are there more, you know, liberal believers? And well, I think given the political makeup, the number of religious fundamentalists out there is astronomically high. I mean,
there was a clip in there and it was too short. It was way too short. But they had all the Republican hopefuls for the nominee for 2008. Yeah. And they had like 10 of them up there. And they said, how many of you don't believe in evolution? And like 8 out of the 10 raised their hand.
Right.
So that's what I'm talking about, is like 8 out of 10 Republican presidential hopefuls believe in the 6,000-year-old Earth and creationism.
Or at least they're claiming that. For their constituents.
And why do they have to claim it?
Exactly.
Because their constituency wouldn't vote for them otherwise.
Yeah.
Right, and he didn't go down that rabbit hole very much. He just
not at all
breezed past it.
I love when they go to Bible Land and he gets to interview the theme park Jesus.
All right, well then let me ask you some questions about your business.
Yes.
Well, really, the Jesus business. God is super powerful. He could do anything.
Sure.
Why doesn't he just obliterate the devil and therefore get rid of evil in the world?
He will.
He will?
Yeah,
what's he waiting for?
End times.
But why play it out like that? Why make it a game?
The second coming. Well, it's not necessarily a game. A day is like a thousand years in God's eyes. It says in the Bible. If you don't look at it, just like 2 days ago, Christ died. But I know that he is so far and beyond any of our ways that he can work the worst situation for his good.
What was the Holocaust? Why was that good?
You know, God had a plan for that. Maybe it's to cause.
I wonder if you would have thought that if you were one of the people being pushed into an oven.
Well, you know what? It's like trying to explain to an ant how a TV works. That's God's ways are so much higher than ours. There's no way you can understand.
And the theme park Jesus is so positive and happy, and he's giving all of these arguments that I don't know how familiar they were to you, but I know that I used some of these before. Like, can you describe what salt tastes like?
Yeah.
You know, that's like the Holy Ghost.
Do you feel the wind?
You can't see it, but you can feel it.
Well, have you ever had a little small voice in the back of your mind say some things?
Okay. We've all had that.
That's not the Holy Spirit.
That's you.
That's called the Holy Spirit.
Oh, the Holy Spirit.
Feel this wind right now?
Yeah.
Okay, where is it?
Yeah,
you don't know, right?
Wind.
Okay, that's not like the Holy Spirit.
It's a monotheistic religion, but there's three of them.
Just like water can be ice, steam, and water.
I see.
It's different forms, different shapes, and different purposes.
I really like that part.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing that you could see as subtext there is that this guy was almost winning. Bill Maher, because of, you know, he owns the way that this is all put together, had to splice himself in and explain, you know, like, well,
no, not like Glenn.
He almost had me on that, but let me tell you why that is still bullshit. Okay, now let's go back to the interview, because I just want to make you know that I'm winning. And it's like,
well, that actually, his little comment after interacting with fake Jesus in the car was he was had never heard the analogy of the Trinity being, you know, water can be gas, liquid, or solid. And he was, like, taken aback by that.
The analogy that Jesus at the amusement park said yesterday was brilliant about the Trinity is like water. It can be steam. Right. It can be ice. It can be liquid. Right. Wow. Yeah. That is, boy, that stopped me in my tracks for a second. You know, that's just a brilliant analogy. I mean, when you think about it for 2 minutes, it's still complete bullshit that, you know, there's the space god and he's himself, right. And he sent himself on a suicide mission, and, you know, he's a god, but he has a kid, he's a single parent. It's just silly. But when you put it in the water analogy, I could see that, you know, those ladies there, when they heard that the first time, they were like, done, sold. Oh, you had me at Ice Cube.
That gives you just a taste of the intellectual level that we're working with Bill Maher as the host.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, on a in terms of comparative religion or in terms of being familiar with a lot of the stuff, I think he's fairly amateur in terms of that, like his religious
background. His actual experience.
Yeah. And his actual experience and actual, he's not someone who could debate, you know, a theologian or something like that, where he's going to be familiar with all these different arguments.
Right.
Right. And he didn't, what he should have done is left it in there. Like, his whole premise is, let me say things that, like with the truck drivers, let me say things that they've never pondered before and capture on film their stupor of thought.
You're 100% sure that after you die, you'll go to a better place.
I know I'll be with God. I'll be with Jesus.
And that's a better place.
Even if it was in a garbage can, which I know it won't be, but even if it was, just the fact that I'm with Jesus, to me, is good.
Is a better place.
It's a better place.
Then yes. Why don't you kill yourself?
Because God still has a mission for me here.
Oh, nice.
And then when he has a stupor of thought because somebody says something to him that he's never heard before, he gets to splice in his explanation as to why it's still bullshit and then cut back to when he's brilliant again. And so that's...
Except you know. He didn't. He acknowledged it as brilliant and said, I could see how that's persuasive. It made me think. And he says, when you think about it for a little longer, it's still bullshit. But I got to tell you, I could get why people... would find that persuasive or whatever. So he didn't really explain it. He just dismissed it as bullshit, but at the same time acknowledged it as, he called it brilliant.
But the way he said that, Matt, it was the unspoken, I can get why stupid people would be convinced right. by that. You know,
and still edited out his initial reaction. That's my point, is he had his own stupid look on his face that we didn't see. He cut to his explanation because he'd rather talk about the fact that he hadn't heard that than show us what really happened. Because I, you know, for every time that he got a stupid look on somebody else's face, we never got to see one on his face. And that's just kind of the nature of a documentary that's more about the celebrity than about the, you know.
Right, again, the Michael Moore documentary.
Do you guys think, you know, or did it bother you at all the times that he would just flat out insult somebody really for the sake of the camera, you know, like there was no respectful discussion or inquiry into this. There were just several times where he would, you know, like with the guy
who was the pray away the gay guy.
You used to be gay and then you married someone who used to be a lesbian and you have three children and I guess the jury's out on them.
He was like that with the pray away the gay guy. He was like that with the shopkeeper who prayed to make it rain.
Well, I don't believe in Santa Claus.
Of course not. That's ridiculous. That's right. One man flying all around the world and dropping presents out of chimney. That's ridiculous. Right. One man hearing everybody murmur to him at the same time. That I get.
And he's like, I'm not 10 years old. Of course I don't believe that. You know, and
black preacher.
And I think it's very interesting that you're a Christian now. Mm-hmm. You were a Muslim. And when you get your clothes, you buy them like a Jew.
The guy who said he was Jesus.
Not just because you share the name Jesus.
No, because...
Because you also share the name Miranda. Maybe you're right. Carmen Miranda.
Yeah, right.
Maybe the second coming of her. And you should have fruit on your head instead of fruit in your head.
In but
it's,
head.
A, it's a, not a documentary. It's a comedy show. I mean, it's that's... Yeah, no, I would expect
that's what happens
that
when you take a stand-up comic and he tries to do something on a serious topic. There's some awkward moments where he's... you know, insulting people, and there's no audience there to appreciate it, and the person he's insulting happens to be in the room.
Well, when it came out, it seems like this was cutting edge and that not a lot of mainstream atheist anti-religion stuff was being put out there. So that was my memory of it when it came out in, what was it, 2008?
It's pretty groundbreaking.
Yeah. I recommend it. I would recommend it to anybody to watch Religious. I mean, I think it has its flaws. Well, what did you guys think of the message at the end? He was talking about the atheists that are in the closet, they need to speak up, and the moderates who are in the middle need to wake up and realize that they're just enablers, they're mafia wives.
That's actually Sam Harris's biggest argument, that moderates give credibility to the fundamentalists, because people can then look at moderates and say, well, being religious is reasonable, and then that gives cover to the fundamentalists. Mm. And I think there's some validity to that, but I don't think that it's completely a valid argument.
No, and I like at least the, if you're a non-believer, you come out of the closet, that is something that's valuable. It's something that's been happening over the last, since the movies came out, what is it, 6 years? But I've also learned that it is really silly to fight against religion, because it's not going away, and it's always going to have a lot of influence. So being a little more diplomatic about things, at least unless you are a celebrity or have some type of a soapbox or bully pulpit you can use, it's just not worth it for the rest of us to fight against religion. It's more important to have a decent dialogue about it.
Yeah, but if the rest of us acted like Bill Maher does in the movie, at work or with our family, or around people who already exist in our lives, it wouldn't be too long before you didn't have any kind of credibility or meaningful relationships, because he's just so over the top with it.
Yeah, I think Religious was groundbreaking and very important, and I'd like to see more documentaries like this. But I also really value the moderate voices in the secular movement as well.
Yeah, and if you're going to watch a comedian do a bit on religion, I recommend the
Julia Sweeney.
Yeah,
Letting Go of God.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
One woman show is, it's poignant, it's heartfelt, and
it's respectful. It's just
well done. Yeah,
and it doesn't pretend to be a documentary. So there you go.
Mari was basically the alter ego of this guy who's a native East Indian.
I am not who you think that I am.
My name is Vikram Gandhi. I come from a long line of religious Hindus.
But born in the United, I think he was raised in the United States and born in New Jersey, and he set out to make this film.
I wanted to know if these spiritual leaders were for real or just full of it.
And he wanted to kind of analyze what it would take to get people to follow him.
I wanted to prove to others who were looking for answers that no one is more spiritual than anyone else, that spiritual leaders are just illusions, and we are the ones who decide who and what is real. So I thought, what if I became a spiritual leader? If I could do it, wouldn't it prove anyone could? With a few cosmetic changes, I could easily look like a guru. So I let my hair grow out, and my beard. Now all I needed was to imitate my grandmother's voice.
Hello!
At first it was fun. It was a prank.
Hello!
How are you? Good to meet you, guru.
Nice to meet you.
I thought he was going for like a Borat kind of thing, where...
Well, I think he kind of was to a way. That was how he started, and once he dealt with these people on an individual level, he couldn't go through with it. And there's a couple things that really kind of show that. One is there's a scene where he's drawing a symbol on a guy, and it's clearly a penis.
Yeah, on his forehead.
Yeah, and then there's another one where he's going through yoga moves, and he's kind of behind the girl, you know, doggy style. And so I think that started, you saw that he was going with this Borat thing, and I'm going to just make fun of these people, and I'm going to be this character, and they're going to fall for it.
There's nothing phony about him.
Kumare is a being that is open towards everything in a non-judgmental way.
But yet this the filmmaker, the director, actor, whatever they call him, seems like a genuinely good guy and pulled up short.
Yeah, well, he has human nature. He just had a connection with these people. He didn't want to really hurt them, and he had plans. If you watch closely, like, his first grand reveal wasn't going to be that grand. He was just going to come out by a poolside and be like, "Hey, I'm really this guy. Let me talk in an American accent." And then his real grand reveal was much more elaborate. And I think that's exactly how it probably played out in his mind. At first, he's like, "Oh, I'll just come out and see their reaction on the fly." And then later, he's like, he orchestrated what is the best way to retain the most amount of goodwill of these people towards me as not being a dickhead for putting them through this. And so he like pre-recorded a movie for them to watch and then walked in at the right moment and had some orchestrated stuff that really, in my mind, depending on the delivery, he could have had a lot more people walk out in the end than he did. But it was just because he wanted to maintain those relationships more than he thought he did.
Yeah, so we kind of set it there.
I think the second reveal came about after they realized we cannot end the movie this way. And so they had to do this grand reveal. But I think you're right. They absolutely... he punted, man. He punted on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Over the course of several months, he gets these people to follow him. And he'd been planning on, you know, outing himself and kind of ending the experiment the whole time. And then he just like you guys said, he struggles with how to do that during the film, which I thought was some of the best part, where he's, you know, like really torn up about what he's done, kind of.
Okay, I've got to jump in for a second here. I'm about to play you a clip from Kumare where Vikram Gandhi, dressed up as Kumare, is standing in front of a mirror getting ready for the unveiling, and he says to himself, "I am not who you think I am. I am a big liar who has fooled you to make you feel like an idiot." So this is a moment of self-reflection and self-doubt as he's getting ready to unveil his secret to his followers. It's a little hard to hear, but hopefully you'll get the sense of it in this next clip.
He's getting emotionally involved, and these are
right.
These are real people with real situations, and they're really connecting with him.
Yeah, and then when he finally...
He would have had to been a world-class asshole to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and when he finally did reveal it, there were people who were pissed at him, but you could really see how someone, if they were starting a religion, how they could just get so caught up in it and just freaking run with it. Like, I mean, he had to end it because he was making a film. And that's what the film was about. But if you'd started something like that and you didn't have like a really great reason to end it, I mean, I'm thinking of Joseph Smith, obviously.
Joseph Smith was called a prophet. Dum, 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 dum.
How do you ever exit from that? I mean, you really can't.
I think it clearly showed that his intentions were one thing, and then just the organic flow of what was happening around him and within himself. He really started to feel like there was things happening to him, and he wasn't even sure if he could explain it as a spiritual thing. But he's like, I felt something to that, and he was feeling connections, and he didn't know if he was going to give the universe credit or whatever. That was the best part of the movie, in my opinion, was watching this inner conflict with him. Like, okay, this was my original design to come into this, and now I've got to take this severe left turn because there is some stuff happening that I did not plan for within himself. And I thought that was absolutely phenomenal, the way they played that out. And even where he was supposed to do the reveal and he just couldn't do it. I thought that was really, really good.
Well, it highlights kind of what we were talking about dealing with other people you know about religion. He's a good example of that. He had this theory, he had this concept that he had played out, but then actually pulling it off, the practicality of it was dealing with real people, it requires more respect, more sensitivity, and
well, I think one of the things that I took from it was that when he becomes the guru and is suddenly showered, and it's not just, I mean, yes, there was the personal connection, but they were showering him with praise and adoration.
Well, and those women wanted to, I mean, they were ready to jump his bones. Like,
right. And Glenn, you got to splice this in because he was interviewed on the Colbert Report. And Colbert asked him, so did you get a lot of tell as Kumare?
Were there more women or men who followed you?
It was more women, yeah.
Did you get crazy tail?
You know, the rules, of a fake spiritual leader are a little stricter than the rules of a real spiritual leader.
So his answer, that was a very clever way of saying, no, of course not. But what you saw there was a guy who started as a skeptic, but then when he was praised and given so much adoration, he then came up with a philosophy on the fly, which is really just one big platitude. You can do it yourself. The power's within you, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
But he really started to believe in that platitude. And you could just totally see how a guy like Joseph Smith, who may have started out as a knowing fraud, but once all this adoration and prestige was heaped upon him, how he could start to believe it. Because the evidence is all around him. Everyone's telling him that he's so great.
And it turns out that apparently he still goes to yoga studios and kind of pitches this idea and this religion or this philosophy that he came up with through this film. So I think that's really an important point, that the indictment or the story that's told isn't about how can people be duped into believing or following a spiritual leader. It's how does a spiritual leader can actually evolve and become. Because that was not explored and could have been explored a little bit more had he really been a little more self-aware as he was going through it. And it's covered a little bit, but I think it could have really been highlighted more.
Well, I had the sense that he was spinning a little bit at the end. You know, the purpose that he states as to why, you know, like the questions that he's trying to explore going into this, he says, can people find the same peace from a made-up religion as they do from a real one? You know, is that really what he was trying to figure out from the start, or is that just
aren't all religions made up?
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the point. Was what you said about it being a platitude of the powers within you? It's not a platitude because every religion, every benefit from every religion, comes from what's inside of people. There is no outside.
Well, I think there's some analogous work here with how Bill Maher dealt with his subject matter. I think part of my issue with the movie was that it was so much about the main character and all of his voiceovers and the rest of the disciples and how they came to be. He had so much material to work with and so many different ways he could have showed us this material. And as it was changing on the fly, he just sort of kept increasing how much he was hedging. Because he started by being like, oh, I went to college and look what that did me. I became even more skeptical and I did this journey to India. And then he wants to go and prove something. And then once he proves it, like way too fast, then it's like, oh, well, let me see what else I can do with this. Okay, and I'm going to keep going. And then it'll be a journey about how... at one point, he's almost like, but yet, could there still be something good about bringing people together in this way? I don't know. I was questioning what I thought I had already figured out. And it was kind of an eye roller for me because I was like, really, dude? Really? Now you're going to have an existential crisis for a second time because you're going to revert back to religion because
I believe it.
Well, I'm the counterpoint to you believing it. I thought I was kind of full of... I don't know. I felt like he was running with it because he knew it would make a good narrative to have like a second relapse / under the cover of an existential crisis to come back to religion because there is some good there now that he's seen it from the top down or something.
I think that was real. He said, no, there is value in religion now that I've seen value in it. Now people have gotten value from me. Now it's what I always say about particularly leaders in the Mormon church, the bishops and stake presidents, particularly on the local level, is of course they believe in inspiration and revelation. They're getting it, and it's reinforcing their own idea. It's the same type of thing.
See, but I don't.
And everyone treats them like they're like special. Like a stake president is like a local rock star, and so he's getting like reinforcement and validation, which feeds into that.
See, I think he's a little self-deluded throughout. Even when he starts taking this left-hand turn and he realizes that he's in way over his head, that he's going to really damage some people, and he doesn't want to damage people, and so he's trying to figure out how he can get out of it.
Right.
And so his great teaching that he's going to pass on to people is this mirror theory, where he's going to teach them that they have the power within themselves to be whatever they want to be. And that they never needed a guru in the first place because they always had the power within them. So he wants to, you know, he's very like dogmatic and holding on to this idea that religion isn't necessary and that a guru isn't necessary. But he's completely, in my opinion, ignoring the reality that these people did need him.
Yeah.
They're all claiming at the end that they needed him. They're very tearful and emotional that, you know, this guy came into their life and that he changed them.
The experience with Kamari has affected my life, and I feel like it has changed my teaching. It's given me the same thing that the students feel, that confidence. And so being a part of a lineage and having the blessing of Kamari has been very helpful.
I will always remember Kamari. Remember from the day I die, I will tell my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids about this wonderful person that came into my life and changed me.
But he's ignoring that because it doesn't fit his belief system that this is unnecessary. But he's in this catch-22, and this is where I thought that he's trying to have it both ways. He's trying to say, I taught these people that people can't really teach anything and that they don't need anything, but and yet look at the value that came from this experience. You know, I don't think that he really is grasping at the end of the movie, at least. I don't know where he is now in real life, but at the end of the movie, I don't think he's really analyzed the data and looked at the evidence of what happened and is interpreting that in the right way.
See, I think I get what you're saying, Glenn, but to me, what he was getting at with that was saying that there's no outside power. Like, yeah, there's a guru who they're listening to, but the fact is they'd made this progress and there was no, you know, there was no Holy Ghost or there was no
great spirit. But when you say outside power, you mean metaphysical, right?
Yes, metaphysically. Yeah. But I completely acknowledge that people help other people.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. That is secular. That's what I mean when I say that the benefits of religion are all secular at their roots, because there's nothing outside of our experience here that gets put into the situation. And I think that's what, if he's trying to show people something and make a point, it's that, hey, you don't need some kind of spiritual path. You just need a little bit of help along the way, and then you can do it all on your own.
But I think he has a faulty hypothesis from the start. You know, like one of the things he says about, you know, I'm going to dress up like a guru and lead these people, and I'm going to prove that if I can do it, anybody can. So he's got this faulty hypothesis that there's this equality, that everybody has, you know, like the same level of intellect, the same capacity for growth, you know, for self-discovery, and that you don't need this spiritual placebo, you know, Dumbo's black feather to make you fly. Everybody has that ability within yourself. But then what he goes in and he becomes that symbol and he becomes that object that people focus on that is outside of themselves. Yeah, it's not metaphysical, but he does that and he draws it out of them. He teaches them how to do it. And to me, he undermines his thesis and the idea, what I saw in it is that these people are not all on an equal playing field. There are some people that really do need other people. Maybe he's not one of them, or he thinks that he's not one of them. But I just thought that equality thesis was faulty.
Yeah, and a lot of the people who were his followers were really broken.
That was the running theme, is even people who appeared somewhat successful had were just lacking something so significantly in their life, whether it be relationships. My guess is that if you looked at those people, they don't have a whole lot of friends or a lot of social structure, outside of this. So that it definitely, again, is an example of someone being able to take advantage of vulnerable people.
Right. Like the one guy was making friends at the, Saturday free samples at Costco or something. And that was like his whole life mission. Well, you can get to know a lot of people with free samples.
Yeah. He was the same guy that when they were doing the mirror theory and he was like telling himself what he needs to do to improve, is like, I will no longer take my neighbor's paper and read it and then put it back on their doorstep. Awesome. And I'm like, so oh my gosh.
That's the one thing in your life you're going to change? Wow.
And that's going to make a difference.
Yeah. Right. Oh, boy.
Yeah, and then you had the overweight, empty nest syndrome lady.
And they make a huge point of pointing things out like, and see, she left off the 70 pounds even to this day. And it's like, so what are you telling me, dude? Like, she did that with her, without you? What's the moral of the story? Fake gurus are useful? Like, I'm confused because I thought that you could do it on your own, but that's clearly not what happened. So yeah, back to your point, Glenn, it just felt like he couldn't tie it all together. It was interesting to watch it progress, but then the payoff was just weird because of all the catch-22s.
The reason why I thought his whole philosophy is just, I think I'm pretty much agreeing with you, Glenn, from a different angle. The reason why I thought his whole philosophy was a platitude is because he's talking about gurus being an easy answer, but then he gives a really basic, easy answer that's not going to work for a lot of people at all. Yeah. And so he was trying to offer a panacea philosophy, whereas, in reality, that a lot of people need professional help. They need some kind of support from other humans.
Well, in one interview, somebody pointed out that his philosophy is only works if you're dealing with good people, because you don't want sociopaths bring out what's inside of them. so I thought that was kind of an interesting insight that this one interviewer pointed out to him, and he thought, oh no, I think all people are good at some level. Well, no, there are just pieces of shit out there that we don't want to.
Yeah,
right.
So how about comparisons? Do we learn anything about these movies by comparing them to each other?
I thought the purpose of Kumare, and maybe to some extent we haven't hit on this, was more that people are gullible. I mean, I think he wanted to say that in sort of a lighthearted, feel-good way, like, hey, we're gullible, but we're not so bad after all kind of thing. whereas Religulous was really more of a sketch comedy meets world religion tour. And I think most people will probably leave the Kumare film a little more happy than they'll probably leave Religulous.
Well, yeah, because the irony is Bill Maher he was like one step below the world ending in 2012 type of rhetoric, like he wasn't helping anybody with his like doomsday music and explosions in the background as he monologues.
We're all gonna die if religion doesn't die.
Right. It's like, wow.
He was pretty heavy handed with it.
For me, the distinction is Bill Maher's movie was an indictment of all religions everywhere, whereas Kumare was an indictment on just certain leaders, but that religion itself is good and valuable. So if there's I guess a through line, or a distinction rather, that's it.
How did he point out that religions are good? Like I didn't get that at all from Kumare.
Oh, you just said it. She still has her 70 pounds off.
Right. No,
that's not. It
changed her life. It changed their lives for the good. They're still. Correct. They learned how to find the guru within themselves.
Well, I guess the interesting thing about this, and something that hasn't been highlighted, is just the idea that there was no talk about the metaphysical. There was a talk about the yoga, the meditation, but not no higher power. The higher power in Hinduism, is my understanding, is the swamis, is these gurus. So they are deities to these.
Wait, the shawarma is the higher power?
Swamis.
Yeah, I mean, you remember the part where Kumari goes to that commune in Tucson, you know, like the little space commune, and he, you know, he's saying this place was investigated by, you know, NBC or whoever it was, but all I saw were good people that were trying to make the best and living off the grid, and you know, so he endorses them, you know. He's rejecting that metaphysical layer of religion, but he's saying that there's value in it for people as a social structure. You know, there is secular value. Where Bill Maher is saying religion is what makes people kill each other.
But why does he then spend all of the interview talking about all the bullshit and not about the practicality of living off the grid? That was just like a throwaway comment, and he's like, therefore, that's something that I can endorse. It's like, well, you just spent like 5 minutes talking to him about the side that has nothing to do with the practicality of helping people.
It's because he was overdubbing it after the fact. You know, this is part of him trying to spin together what he did, starting off as a joke. You know, trying to make it more profound.
That was when he was doing a lot of the Borat stuff. So I think he was using material that's like, man, now that my narrative has changed, how can I apply this? That's exactly what I thought as well.
Because he's still showing clips of them saying these absolutely ridiculous things about the planets that they come from. And
they're getting
that,
abducted,
you know,
by an alien.
Yeah,
and
right.
The alien removing his memory. And
But I think by the point it came for him to edit this and overdub it, he had changed his view, and he's like, I don't want to be an asshole about this, so I've got to balance this out somehow. And I think genuinely too. I mean, I think he really was touched by what happened. And you know, one of the things that I think is a big difference between these two movies is that at the end of Kumare, Vikram Gandhi has changed. You know, he's learned something. He's not the same person he was that he started out at the beginning of the film. Bill Maher is just as arrogant and smug, and
right.
You know, this has had no impact on him.
There's no character development in Religulous.
There's no arc.
Not that the character development in Kumari's
a fiction
story is either accurate,
compelling,
or useful, or compelling. Yeah, but it is a change, so that there is that.
Again, I'm gonna endorse Julia Sweeney's Letting Go of God.
And there's also a fundamental difference in, you know, taking on a character and then interacting with real people versus just being Bill Maher. Going around interviewing and making fun of people, how the hell is he going to change? I mean, he's not going to change.
Well, he could be a little more, like, at least pretend to be somewhat open-minded when he's talking to people.
He said at the beginning of his movie that he wanted to understand why rational people believed. And he did interview, I mean, there were a couple of those Catholic priests.
Well, he interviewed Francis Collins, the head of the Genome Project, one of the 7%... of believing members of the National Academy of Scientists, or whatever that is, the most prestigious group of scientists to be a part of. But he really, you know, Francis Collins, if you want to understand his story better, read the book The Believing Mind by Michael Shermer. He gets into a really in-depth interview with Francis Collins and into his reasons for believing. Because Francis Collins, and you don't even get this from the documentary, he started off as an atheist and then became Christian.
No, I mean, Bill Maher just used him as a counterpoint to say, would that kind of, would this faith that you have hold up in court? You know, this isn't very reliable. This isn't the same as scientific evidence. You know, it was like, how can you live with this dissonance? You can't, you know? So like he's not.
But the whole time he's Bill Maher. I mean, he's
exactly.
You're not. I just don't think that you can expect him to change by interviewing a bunch of fundamentalists and then splicing in a couple of legitimate people. That
I didn't
he doesn't
say that
really
I expected him to change. I said that one of the differences that he didn't. But at the beginning of his documentary, he said he
That's
wanted
true.
To know.
I just have to find out. I have to try.
So he framed it as, this is a journey of exploration, and I'm going to go because I've got to learn. I've got to understand this. I need to understand this. But
right.
He doesn't take any tactics that he's trying to understand.
Yeah, it's not just change; it's the nature of the inquiry that he was making there. It didn't seem genuinely like he was trying to figure something out. It seemed like he was trying to just make his point.
And you're right, Randy. I mean, I know Bill Maher. I wouldn't expect that from him. So I'm surprised when I hear him put that clip in at the beginning of his movie. And I'm wondering, why did he put that there?
I think it makes him a lovable guy, but
I think he thought he might be able to, but I don't think he's intellectually capable of diving deep into these issues. I mean, just the way he reacted to the most common metaphor for the Trinity, water, ice, and steam.
Yeah.
I don't think he was self-aware enough to realize that he's not capable of undergoing this that kind of exploration.
Well, not to put you on the spot, Randy, but what would you be your off-the-cuff response to a believer using that? And I'm just curious what the
off-the-cuff response to a believer using what?
The water, steam, ice analogy, other than just saying what Bill Maher said, that but he had to splice it in and edit it. But I'm just wondering, what's the deep discourse to go into?
Well, I think it's all water. Those are just different, those are different forms of water. It's not three separate but equal.
There you go. Okay.
Well, I mean, it also doesn't explain why do you pray yourself.
All that other stuff too.
Why do you pretend that there's a father and son? And
that ice begets water, you know, or whatever it is. And then,
all right, you sold me. You guys have both done all. Already you've done better than he did in less time. So
well, that wasn't the first time we'd ever heard that. That's the thing. That's the difference.
This is true. Yeah, so what I'm getting as a grand takeaway from both of these, in my opinion, and Matt keeps bringing up Julia Sweeney, is that it feels like either for religion as a topic, either sticking with a narrative like Julia Sweeney did and letting people learn from that narrative and that story, you should really either go that approach or you should go the full-on documentary approach, which I don't think we've actually seen before. And both of these movies that we're sort of recapping / reviewing are trying to have it, again, I'm overusing this phrase, but they're having it both ways by being in the middle of like, let me intertwine my narrative / teach you something through the expose of interviewing some people, and therefore it's officially educational and documenting something. And I feel like it's kind of a trick in both cases, and that's the common thing for me. I want to see a real documentary on religion or some more narratives that implicitly offer some interesting things.
Yeah, and I didn't have the same problems that you did, Bob, with the way that they interjected themselves and made them central figures in each of their movies. I mean, I thought it worked for what they were going for. And I still think there's stuff that you learn in both cases and things that Bill Maher does that are good, that expose, you know, through satire. I think Randy made this point earlier that satire does a good job of exposing some of the really ridiculous claims taken apart. But that's valuable.
I think Bob's point is don't start off the documentary like you mentioned earlier, Glenn. This is an exploration. It's like, just be honest from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
And who you are.
If you think about any other topic that you could make a documentary about, like I really enjoyed the movie Who Killed the Electric Car, and it's not like the filmmaker started out by like, and here's a childhood picture of me and playing with cars, and I always wondered about an electric car. I mean, it's just like, why nobody cares, and it's only because it's religion that you can get away with like, here's me pontificating on my own opinion, which is irrelevant to exploring a larger subject matter, but we fall for it because we relate to it. But if you really want to explore the subject matter, it has nothing to do with the filmmakers. Anyway, stepping off my soapbox.
Okay. Reach out, touch
faith. So that's the one. That, I mean, in Religulous, Bill Maher has the whole thing where he's like fallen for this Horus equals Jesus thing.
That's
right. We talked about that a little bit.
I could not believe that he led with that. Like it was something legitimate.
They didn't fact check it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so sad. What such a huge fuck up.
But he also presents himself as being neutral.
I'm just asking questions.
He's just a giant dupe, though. I mean, that's a dupe.
The guy's a fucking anti-vacker. That's all I need.
Yeah.
I mean, right. He backpedaled from that a little bit, but it doesn't matter.
I haven't seen the movie.
All right, what's on this next?
So, Tom, you'll hate it, John.
The movie itself is entertaining, though.
No, you wouldn't like it.
No,
there's 3 out of 5. You know, it's
there's
not.
Parts of it that are entertaining, but his
it was based on. I mean, but he got that from like Zeitgeist, which is a different movie, right?
Yeah, he did
that one's
from
terrible.
Yeah.
Oh,
which
man.
I had Zeitgeist to download that because I mean there were so many people that kept on posting this stupid Horus thing, and it's so stupid.
Yeah.
So insanely stupid, and then they're like, well, it was on Religulous, and then that was from Zeitgeist, and so I actually downloaded Zeitgeist, but I was unable to even watch, like, any part of it. It just drove me crazy to even
start. So that Horus thing is just false.
It's bullshit. It's 100% bullshit. There's nothing to it.
It fits somebody's narrative, and so they like it, so they use it, but they don't fact check it, and it just keeps getting a life and a life and a life.
Right. Yeah. It's any stupid thing that some random dumb guy in the 19th century made up, which is what this is, but it has nothing to do with anything, and it's total crap.
All the parallels between Horus and Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's dumb parallelisms, and it's stupid.
Well, the thing that's annoying is that there actually are like cultural parallels to some of the aspects of Jesus that, you know, things that weren't uncommon, like the virgin birth.
There's all kinds of things that are absolutely normal in a mystery cult. When you have a mystery cult that has a savior, you accrete onto it all sorts of regular mythic characteristics, like
I'm going to call them motifs,
birth.
John. Can I call them motifs?
Birth, whatever, motifs.
Yes.
And so all of those kind of, you know, so you throw all those in. Those are all legendary things that get added onto any myth, you know, but it has nothing to do with Horus in this particular...
Well, that's what pisses me off, is because they put out bullshit when there's actually a point that could be made that's legitimate.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're not making that point.
No, they're not.
No. I mean, they're like that list of the things. The list of the things is like that Horus was baptized by Anapip the Baptizer or something.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's that level. You know,
Johanna the Baptizer.
I mean, it is literally that level of stupidity. So, I mean, it's the same exact kind of parallels that are the parallels of View of the Hebrews or the, you know, the Quetzalcoatl thing, which is to say these things that early 19th century people were doing when they were running around and deciding, oh, Native Americans, you know, rub sticks together, that means they're Hebrews. I mean, it's literally that level of stupidity that, like, View of the Hebrews, which is, you know, or, you know, all of those different texts that people that were running around that people think influenced the Book of Mormon or any other thing like that. You know, anyway, that's just the kind of nonsense pseudoscience that people were doing. And this Horus thing is from one of those sources, but it's totally debunked. It has nothing to do with anything. So,
you know, all this time I thought that the reason that this episode only had 2,800 downloads is because I gave it a stupid title, Beliefumentary, but now I realize it's because we didn't have John Hamer giving it credibility, but now we do.
Yeah,
so let's see how it does.
We should do this is making me think we should do an episode on, like, maybe we each pick one thing of something that a lot of ex-Mormons believe that is demonstrably false.
The Brother Jack.
Brother Jack sort of speaks. Not really. Yeah, kind of. Something along the same flavor as that. Of there's just things
Ex-Mormon
like that
myths.
That I. Yeah, ex-Mormon myths, things that I see people post all the time that drive me crazy.
I do.
Like an angel, like Joseph Smith was commanded by an angel with a flaming sword. No, he wasn't. It was a drawn sword. Flaming sword was from.
Oh, man.
A cherubim and a flaming sword. Yeah, that bugs me.
Well, that's not a very long clip there.
No, that was just
super. It's a micro-sode. It's a micro-sode.
Hi, this is Malachi from the heart of Asia, the island of Taiwan. When tropical storms keep me inside all day, I listen to Infants on Thrones to drive away boredom and drown out the wind. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.